Station number 9723.
Mr. Caravan, reel 5.
Well, the Greeks really did hate the Germans because I used to occasionally play a practical joke on them when we were passing through a village. That they would come out and stir, and I used to say Tedeschi, Tedeschi, which was the Greek word for German, and they used to say, no, no, and they would then say, you know, in various terms, what they thought of the Germans. I used to say, no, I'm a German, I'm Tedeschi, and they'd say, no, and they would then rant and rave about the Germans. I never met anyone who had a good word to say about the Germans.
When you're taking a bit of a risk by playing that joke?
I don't know, I suppose it might have been. And when to go back, when I was taking the 4 German prisoners to back to Patras, we picked up a woman and we gave her a lift in this jeep. Was it a jeep? No, it was a 1500 weight. We gave her a lift and she was disgusted to find that she had to travel with 4 Germans. I think she was... You know, even though she had a long way to go, she was on the point of refusing to travel with them. She was so disgusted with Germans.
What was there about the Germans which they seemed to dislike most?
The brutality and the theft. They would, two of the, you know, the Greeks were starving, no doubt about that. They had nothing to eat. And the Germans would tour the country and take what they wanted in the way of dairy produce, chickens, eggs, whatever. And have no hesitation in taking. They have no hesitation in destroying villages. For, you know, for one reason or another. In fact, I think the Germans in the past were virtually out of control of their senior officers. I think they behaved with such brutality towards the Greeks. Certainly those, there was a, I believe there was a gang of Moroccans who were in the German army who behaved with great brutality.
In what way?
Well, in destroying and stealing and thieving and whatever.
Did you personally see anything of the Moroccans?
I didn't personally see them, no. No.
Now, you said apart from the major, there was a captain with him. What role did he have?
Well, he was in... He was in an intelligence role. I think he was a fluent German speaker, and I think he was to disseminate propaganda amongst the Germans, adverse propaganda by the spies that we had going into German garrisons and this sort of thing. He was an expert on German behaviour, German formations, etc., etc.
Did you say
really?
That?
Really, he carried on as he wished. You know, he really did as he wanted to do.
Did you see much of him?
Not a lot. No, not a lot. It's just that he was. We supplied him. He was with us, and he ate with us, and he got his supplies through us.
But he was an Englishman, was he?
Oh yes, yes, he was an Englishman. Yes.
Where from?
I've no idea. I didn't converse with him much, didn't talk to him much. Because he used to spend most of his time talking to the Germans we had with us.
How did you come to leave SOE?
Well, when I was taken back, when I got back to Cairo in December, I heard on the grapevine that most of the operators were being sent home. So I went to the headquarters in Rustam Buildings and said, what about it? Can I go home? And they said, well, we were rather hoping that you would volunteer to go to Crete. I said, well, why should I go to Crete? And they said, well, the Germans are still in Crete and we need an operator in Crete. So I said, OK, I'll go to Crete. And they said, well, OK, we'll send for you when we want you to go, which will be in the near future. Well, for board and lodgings, they put me in a barracks, Abbasiyah barracks on the outside of Cairo. And it wasn't very nice there then. Because I was a bit upset that he hadn't put me on the houseboat. We had a houseboat on the Nile, which was owned by SOE. And I think Spider was on the houseboat, Spider Lawson. So I used to spend my nights on the houseboat. Instead of going back to Abbasiyah, I used to go and sleep on the houseboat, unbeknown to them, you see. because my only duty was to report to customs, to Rustam Building at 10 o'clock every morning, and after I'd reported, the day was my own. So they didn't know where I slept or what I did. So I stayed on the houseboat. There was a spare bed, and I used to sleep on this houseboat and go in and report in the morning. Well, the night that I slept on the houseboat was the night they went to Abbasia Barracks looking for me to take me to Crete. I was to go to Crete. And, of course, they couldn't find me, and they owned the impression that I was absent somewhere, which I was. I was on the houseboat. So the mission for Crete went without me. When I went, reported at 10 o'clock the next morning, all hell broke loose, because they said they'd been looking all night for me. They'd sent military police everywhere looking for me, and I was in dire trouble. And I said, well, you know, one of those things, I got drunk and I stayed on the houseboat. I couldn't get back to Abbasia. And they accepted this. But they said, you're going to Italy. And the next day, I was on my way to Portside and put on the boat, I think it was the Amsterdam to Scotland, and I went to Italy. I went to, I think, Castellana, which was another SOE base depot in Italy. And while I was at the base depot in Italy, I was there I was there for a couple of weeks when they moved the depot up to Siena, or near to Siena. And when we moved up to Siena, when we arrived at Siena, they said to me, well, you're being seconded to another unit. And I went to IS-9, which was, I think it's Intelligence Service Number 9. I'll show you my identity card later. And I went to, I don't think Florence had been captured then. We were just outside, to a villa just outside Florence with this a major, I can't remember his name, and I never want to remember his name because I just didn't like him, he was a swine. But we were engaged in helping to recover escaped prisoners. And we had agents who used to cross the line into German-occupied Italy and guide the escaped prisoners through the mountains, and we would send them merrily on their way. Well, then Germans retreated, and we moved up to Bologna, and we moved in on the heels of the Germans into Bologna, and there were some terrible atrocities there. The Italians were shooting each other hand over fist for one reason or another.
Did you witness any of these atrocities?
Oh yes, in Bologna.
Can you describe them?
I saw the women being dragged out into the streets and their hair being shorn off, and paraded through the streets, and the people getting shot. But anyway, we moved. We didn't stay in Bologna. We moved, and the major I was with, he was, I hate to say this, but he was petrified. He was petrified because we were close to the Germans. And he insisted on me being with him with a Bren gun in the front of the Jeep with the windscreen down. And we were very close to the German army that was retreating. In fact, we reached the River Po as the Americans were throwing a bridge across, a pontoon bridge. And as we crossed this pontoon bridge, and on the other side we came to a troop of Sherman tanks, which were, as I knew, being a tankman, they were in the hull down position, and they were ready for action. And I said to him, we're getting a bit too close for comfort now, because if we go beyond these tanks, we're going to be in the firing line. So he said, well, let's chance it, you know. He said, well, I don't want to get killed at this stage of the war. And I said, well, neither do I. He said, well, there's nothing we can do now but go on. So we drove up the road, and every house we passed had a white bed sheet out of the window, hanging out the window. And I thought, well, you know, that's a sign of surrender or whatever. And we drove into a town, and there was a deathly silence in this town. There were people on the pavement, and there was just silence. They just stopped and looked at us, just the major and I in the Jeep. So I couldn't understand this, why, they just didn't want to know us. And then all of a sudden, when we stopped in the town centre, I think of the name of the town, surely, not Padua, but I think the name of the town.
Mantua?
That's it, Mantua. How did you know?
Just guessed.
Yeah, Mantua. We stopped in the centre of Mantua, and the people rushed out, and they were cheering and screaming and bringing bottles of wine and flowers. We were the first English they'd seen You know, they realised that we weren't Germans, that we were English. And they feted us with flowers and cakes and bottles of wine. And oh, it was fantastic, a fantastic welcome, really. And they told us there was a hospital just up the road full of wounded prisoners or ex-prisoners or had been abandoned by the Germans. And we went up to the hospital and there was quite a lot there. But there were mixed nationalities and they were pathetic to see them.
In what way?
They had paper bandages, you know, dirty, filthy paper bandages on them, and the bedding wasn't what you'd think in a hospital, you know, rubbish, dirty sheets and bits of old blankets. Anyway, we made an urgent call for supplies. I had the radio set, and within hours they sent two Dakotas loaded with supplies and dropped them where we were, and dropped what, half a dozen containers with medical supplies, and we dropped them off. And this peculiar major I was with, we went to a hotel, quite a grand hotel. He said, "I'm staying here, you find your own." So that was charming. And we found a house where the door was open and it was deserted, and it was obviously been a German residence. And we went in, and there was a sergeant had caught up with us at this time. There was just me and him, and we went into this house, and the door was wide open, flapping open. And magnificent inside. There was magnificent furniture and silk sheets on the beds and covered with stuff. But I was frightened of booby traps, and he was frightened of booby traps too. So we tested the bed, and the bed seemed to be all right. So we slept on the bed that night. A big, I would say it was a treble bed, beautiful bed. I've never seen one like it. And we slept on the bed, and I pinched the sheets off it. But we wouldn't look into it. We didn't want to look into cupboards, because, you know, we'd seen a few booby traps. And the Germans were very adept at booby trapping cupboards and drawers. I know that was a lot of treasure in that house, but anyway, we left the house and went back to the hospital. They had the supplies and everything was in order. So we moved up again towards Verona. By this time, the Fifth Army had veered off. They hadn't taken. They didn't go to Verona. We went to Verona, and some units had been there, but the Fifth Army hadn't. The Germans had just evacuated it, and we went to another house in Verona, which had been used by the Gestapo, and quite a nice house. It was empty. It had left a load of rubbish. That was all. The Germans were very dirty, and they always left rubbish. Anything I found was a Gestapo cap, which I gave away. But we moved in there, and we then helped all the prisoners who were coming down. They were escaping like mad from Austria, coming down over the Alps and coming down through Italy. They had all kinds of cars, full of loot. And we helped. We had two ex-prisoners who'd been captured in 1940. They came down in a beautiful big Lagonda, the first one I'd ever seen. They'd stolen it in Austria somewhere.
What kind of loot did the prisoners have?
Silverware, everything they could loot from houses in Austria or northern Italy, Klagenfurt or wherever they'd come from. Furniture, all kinds. But these two had this big Lagonda, beautiful column change. I'd never seen a column change car before, and this was a big, beautiful open Lagonda, and we took it off them. And we had this Lagonda, and it was we were like two staff officers driving around in it. Beautiful.
Did you let them keep the loot?
Oh yes. We let them keep the loot, whatever they could carry. But a lot of it was ridiculous that they couldn't carry, you know, pieces of furniture and stuff.
I think that you got a tapestry belonging to Mussolini, didn't you?
Yeah.
Where was that from?
That was from his house in Milan.
Can you describe his house in Milan?
Yes, it was not really. It was I know it had a big balcony for speech making and a big double oak door and you know, large wide staircase. But this I had been well and truly looted, but this was on the wall, and it took my fancy, because beggars can't be choosers, you've got to take what's left.
Can you describe the tapestry?
Well, it's the size of a double bed. It's I'm not going to get into trouble over this. It's the size of a double bed, quilted, and it's got a knight on horseback made in some kind of gold wire, threaded into it.
But it's not in your possession now, I think.
Pardon?
It's not in your possession now.
No, it's not in my possession now.
I think a relative's got it.
Well, it's about somewhere, I think.
Now, this IS-9 presumably wasn't part of SOE then?
No, it wasn't part of SOE. It was a separate organisation, but they needed a radio operator, and I was loaned to them.
And going back to Bologna, presumably these people who were getting their heads shaved and shot, they were alleged collaborators,
That's
weren't
right,
they?
Yes. Yeah. And, well, this excuse was used for settling old scores, wasn't it, all the time, throughout Europe. I mean, you could shoot somebody and say they were a collaborator, whether they were or not. Nobody could disprove it, I suppose, in the heat of liberation.
How many people seemed to be getting their heads shaved? In what kind of numbers?
Oh, I would say I must have seen half a dozen. Half a dozen, at least.
Did anybody try to stop them shaving their heads?
No. In Verona, where we were, we had a senior SS officer who had been captured somewhere and was accused of atrocities against British prisoners, and he had been handed over to us by the Italian Carabinieri, and we were to safeguard him until he could come for trial in Rome. We sent him down to Rome. So we had him for a few days, and whilst we had him, we had a boy brought in by the Carabinieri who belonged to what was called the Brigata Nero, which was Mussolini's Black Brigade, and his crime was alleged to have been that he had beaten a British soldier, prisoner of war, to death with the butt of his rifle. And he was to go on trial, apparently. And this major that I was with, I can't remember his name, not that I ever want to, suggested that I shot him. But I didn't think much of this idea, and I told him plainly that I didn't think much of it. And he didn't think much of me refusing either, but that was his suggestion, that I shot the boy.
Did he survive?
The boy? Oh, yeah, he was sent. He went on to Rome. He was for trial, I believe.
When you say a boy, what kind of age?
About 15, I think. Yeah, about 15 years of age.
Do you think it was true that he really had beaten a British POW?
Oh, yeah, I would believe that, yeah. I mean, you see, the last of the fascists were really hard-bitten. They were hard-bitten men.
What was his demeanour? Was he frightened or defiant?
He was defiant, yeah. He was defiant, he was cocky. Yeah, I suppose he was relying on the protection of his age, really.
Who'd made the accusations against him, though?
Well, this had been made by somebody to the Carabinieri, and the Carabinieri arrested him and handed him over to us.
Speaking generally from your experience during the war, what did the attitude of the regular army seem to be towards SOE?
Well, I think in the main, I think in the main that they considered that we were really a cowboy outfit who didn't really help much in the war effort, commensurate with the amount of money and resources expended on our efforts. And I must have some sympathy with that view.
So do you feel that the money spent on SOE would have been better spent elsewhere?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, I'm sure it was, from what was achieved. I mean, it has been put to me that the Greeks were happy to have us amongst them. And on that score alone, the expense was justified, but I can't see that at all. I can't see that the Greeks were happy because we were there. I mean, they did ask us for what they could get out of us, I agree, but I'm quite sure that I go along with the suggestion that perhaps we were a waste of money and that we were would have been better employed in the main forces.
I think you were also saying to me earlier on that you felt that to some extent SOE agents in Greece were being used to try to give the Germans a false impression.
Oh, well, I think that's always on the cards. I mean, I think it's always on the cards that if there was any activity in Greece with by the SOE liaison officers, that the Germans would consider that something was going to happen in Greece, which would either cause them to fortify their positions there or to completely withdraw them, whichever.
When you dropped, before or after D-Day?
After.
Very long after?
No, not much long after. No, not much long after. But I think my operation was planned before D-Day, I think it was.